Okay, let's get back together again, if that's all right. I guess we've all had some experience of being involved in one-to-one subject. It might not be kind of in the formal sense you were allocated a one-to-one, whether at the kind of junior or senior end, but I imagine you have shared your life, shared the gospel with somebody else, and so that would count as having a bit of experience in it. On the kind of what it was about the people, maybe if you've been inspired spiritually by someone who's been older than you, what are some of the kinds of things that were being said about older people and the influence that they can have, spiritually older people, that is? What kind of things were being said?
One of my friends inspired me to evangelism. He's like really on fire.
Okay, kind of. The evangelistic zeal, okay, thank you. Anything else?
Generosity with time and money.
Okay. Generosity, read, time and money. Yeah, thank you.
With me?
Yeah. Say in. Faith in God, yeah, thank you. Humble, yeah, okay, humility, that's good. Great, well, hopefully that has been a positive experience, and we might be able to kind of enact some of that for other people too. It's funny, whenever I do this seminar, it always feels a bit like a magician telling other people how they do their magic tricks. I've always had people who I've done one-to-ones to in these seminars. It's always fun to be in that situation. Three key Bible principles of discipleship before we kind of hone in on the one-to-one-ness of it. Speaking the truth in love ministry is for everyone. This is, I think, in some respects, it's the kind of the church's missing link, actually. You know, churches generally are great, well, should be good at Bible teachings, up front, and we work hard at trying to teach God's word faithfully from the pulpit. And we may have a network of Bible study groups, house groups, small groups, if you're all with CUs, you've got those kind of things. But the kind of, there is a key ingredient that is clearly a New Testament norm, a Bible norm, that is that everyone is involved in speaking the truth in love, in the informal ways before even the formal ways. So, speaking the truth in love, we will grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. From him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. That's in Ephesians. And the context is the corporate body life of the church. It's not, this is not apostles speaking about apostles speaking the truth. I mean, it's just we as the church family to speak the truth in love to one another. Very often that happens informally, and you don't need to have a structure where you sign a card to do it with someone who's a student, maybe, or if you're not a student but you'd like to have someone input into you, sorry, you can't have it because there is no kind of structure. No, it's just an impromptu, spontaneous, informal thing. But it's a ministry for everyone, it's the priesthood of all believers, kind of thing. Okay, second key principle of discipleship, so it's for everyone. Secondly, sharing gospel and sharing your life go together. We often divide those two things up, not deliberately, but functionally we do. But 1 Thessalonians is a brilliant book to study just to get our whole heads around the whole area of discipleship. So whether you want to read it yourself in a quiet time, or if you ever have a chance to do a one-to-one, do 1 Thessalonians. You'll kind of study it yourself. We love you so much that we're delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you have become so dear to us. We didn't put it up here, but I could imagine one kind of word that is a kind of catch-all for some of these things is love. The older believers who loved us and clearly love the Lord and love other people who invest in them. I can think of particularly an individual, when I came to Eden as a student, Josh Moody, who was a student pastor in those days, he really kind of invested in me. He loved me, and it was not just a sharing the gospel thing, it was really a sharing life thing too. So we used to hang out offline, if you like. We used to play tennis quite regularly, or, you know, we have this structure at Eden called Hope and Homes where we link young students up with church families, and sometimes there's a kind of an overlap between that and the one-to-one. So for example, I can think of a couple of students, Aris and Grace, who got married last year, and their respective senior partners, which is the way we term the older person in the one-to-one, was a married couple called Will and Vanessa Kynes, who some of you might know, and they were able to model not just kind of how you study the Bible when they were doing their Bible time, but just normal, messy family life with a little baby, and it was just kind of really, you know, life as well as gospel. So that's a key conviction which we're trying to enact. Thirdly, imitators are the best examples. 1 Thessalonians 1 again, you know how we lived among you for your sake. For you welcomed the message in the midst of severe suffering with the joy given by the Holy Spirit. And so you became a model to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia. We tend to think that you've got somebody who is either an imitator kind of person, or you're the younger types, the ones who look up, that we want you to be kind of learning from us, from, you know, from the Lord. There are other people who are the kind of example types who show other people how to live and press on. But you see strikingly here, these Thessalonians, in their imitation, they become an example. Can you see that? You became in the place of us and the Lord, and so you became a model, and they welcomed the message with joy. And their being a good imitator, which led to them welcoming the message with joy, made them a great model. So at one and the same time, you've got kind of, it's not, you know, here's an imitator kind of person and here's an example kind of person, and the imitator kind of person looks out to other people and the example is people look to them. It's rather that you are an imitator and an example at the same time, and people look to you in your role as an example and you look to others in your role as an imitator. So that means if you're going to be involved in discipleship, I hope you've got older people who you're still looking up to. I don't think I've arrived now, I'm now Mr. Example or Miss Example, and hopefully, you know, come follow me. No, it's come follow me as we follow ultimately Christ, but hopefully there'll be people kind of, you know, a little way on in the race who you can keep looking up to, whether formally or informally. Questions or comments about that, those three key kind of convictions? Or observations. Everyone happy with all of that? Excellent. Okay, let's press on. And now we're going to think, okay, we've thought about discipleship more broadly. We're now kind of zooming in a bit on one-to-ones. Compared with small group work, what are the specific challenges and opportunities of one-to-one discipleship? So the three points you've made so far could have applied to house groups with a leader, or college CU with a Bible study leader, etc. Here we're now beginning to zoom in on one-to-ones. What's the challenges and the opportunities germane to that particular ministry? Okay, back in your little groups, have a go. It might be, I guess it's this because you've never been in one, but you know, what are your hunches? Okay, I think we're going to interrupt there. So we're talking about the challenges and opportunities of one-to-one over small groups. Okay, so what are some of the challenges did we envisage?
Personality clashes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Personality clash, thank you. Thank you.
The challenge could be, much as being mini sermon every week. So the person is, I guess, it accentuates that example and imitating what they're doing.
Yeah. It could be kind of one way, quite one way. Yeah. 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 Thank you. Other challenges?
Comes with someone who you don't know very well.
Okay, so it's kind of, yeah, kind of having to be, having to have a friendship kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, normally you think of friendship as something that is a kind of natural thing, whereas we're kind of matchmaking it all, kind of almost. It's like, become friends.
Having to have a friend. That makes sense.
Okay, because I think friendship is a key factor in it, which we're going to come and see shortly. Okay, other opportunities? We could, unless you've got more challenges, but just let's explain
one thing. One of the challenges, but I guess it doesn't just apply to one-to-ones, is one-to-meet-up.
Okay,
Particularly if the department is no longer a student and is working, potentially in a different place, and there was a junior partner.
You could argue that that potentially is one over the groups thing, because it's easier to connect two people than eight people, but cool. Are there other opportunities? Let's talk about those, because you want to be encouraging that one to one. It's not all hard.
You can be much more individually tailored.
Individual tailoring. Something I'm sure this is very close to your heart, James. How do you stop tailoring? There we are. Anything else? Yes, thank you. I'm not going to mock every comment that comes in, by the way. It's just like, don't feel that's going to happen. Any other thoughts?
It is a little friendship,
like,
easier to form a friendship
with
when you're one-on-one rather than
a big group. So that's potentially easier. Thank you.
So in a small group, if we're eating, probably not eating every week. Whereas in a one-to-one, you need to be preparing something every week.
So more work, potentially.
Which is an opportunity to learn what's happening.
Good, thank you. That's the attitude, Daniel. More work, that's over here as well. More work over here as well. Learning opportunities. I guess on the potentially easier thing, if it works, it can really kind of be hugely significant. You just think of one person. You know, it may be that we can think of individuals who have had a great impact on us, and that relationship has been really significant. So it can be explosively good, if you like. Is it an opportunity? The fact there's nowhere to hide in a one-to-one, I think potentially is a good thing about a one-to-one. Do you know what I mean? That if you're the kind of younger, the wanting to hide and can't hide, it's not so good. But it's as a discipleship thing. It potentially, you can't doze off. You've got to be there.
I mean, it links up to the individual tailoring thing. I mean, it's one to one for me to understand how. Being a Christian applies to relationships, and actually do something about it. Whereas I've heard lots and lots of talks about how being a Christian applies to relationships, and haven't done that. I think that's an interesting idea. Whereas when you have someone going, but you're doing this, that doesn't make sense.
That is a big, huge aspect, and it means that potentially there's opportunity to ask questions more easily if you're the younger person in it, potentially too, I guess. Okay, let's press on. Well, here you go. A definition of a one-to-one. I don't know what you would come up with. I didn't ask you to do this, but one definition that we've sometimes used, I think it's quite a good one, is friendship with a purpose. So it's friendship we want it to be, but we want there to be some purposefulness to it, which I think is a good. I hope you live purposeful lives. Not aimless. And do you want a pen, don't? There's a spare pen. I once heard a guy speaking, and he was making notes about what he was going to say later on the talk while giving the talk. So I'm not planning on doing that. So you can have one. Friendship with a purpose. Let's think about four key ingredients of one-to-ones. So now we're into the gut. You've come to a session on leading one-to-ones, but now we're right into it. I think the four key ingredients that I want to encourage you to work on are friendship, Bible, accountability, and prayer. Friendship, Bible, accountability, prayer. Now, I've broken that down on this sheet in those kind of, fairly arithmetically, assuming you, say, had an hour lunch break to give, and, 10 minutes friendship, half an hour Bible, 10 minutes... You're not doing it in series. if that means anything to you, rather they're kind of in parallel. So sometimes you might spend more time, you'll interweave prayer into it, or there's a bit of accountability might come up in your study, in which case go there, whatever. But that's just an idea of a rough general breakdown of, I think, an ideal kind of set of ratios that you might want to aspire to, at least. It'll change week on week. A few things to kind of point, let's just kind of walk through that quite quickly. Friendship, just make this clear. You don't have to be their best friend, and you're not a failure if you're not their best friend at the end of the time, or even you know, that it still feels quite asymmetric. It is going to be a bit asymmetric. It might be a bit more asymmetric or a bit less asymmetric according to your relative age difference and your relative experience difference. I think there are kind of two models of one-to-one. There's either the uncle model of your senior partner, or the big brother model, apply, you know, gender inclusively, or the aunt and or the big sister. I think that don't pretend to be one when you're another. And just because you're closer in age doesn't mean you're not going to end up. But yeah, it's not that the big brother model is better or the uncle model is better. But there are two ways of doing that friendship. So that, I guess, is the kind of inspired by the sharing your life aspect of the 1 Thessalonians, or the in love bit. We're really wanting to deepen our friendship with these folks. We'll talk a bit more about that down the line. But basically, I think just be a good friend. You know. However, if you ever meet someone at church and you try to connect with them, encourage them, well, apply that to a one-to-one. Remember information about them. Send them cards when you know that they've got kind of a deadline coming up. Send them sweets when you know they've got a deadline coming up, if you're doing it with me or whatever it may be. So invest in the friendship. Talk about yourself as well as asking them loads of questions. That's a great way of sharing your life, isn't it? Invite them into your world as well as going to their world. If you've got a house, if you've got a family, if you've got hobbies, you've got things. Look for mutual hobbies that you could potentially do together, as well as the Bible time. So if you both play, tennis, squash, badminton, football. If you both are into knitting, if you're both into playing on your Xbox, do some hangout time as well as, you know, kind of input time. Go for a drink with them offline, where you're not going to do any of the Bible accountability prayer time, but just going to do friendship time. That's a great use of an hour with them. But a really great use of the time is the Bible bit. That's the sharing the gospel bit. We're going to come on to that in a second, so I won't labour that point right now. The accountability bit, again, we're going to come on to that a bit more in a second. I think it's one of the kind of key missing links in, as I say, in church ministry accountability. It's something that you really do have in a way that in a group it's harder to enact. By the way, I'm talking about one-to-one. It might be that you have the opportunity to lead a one-to-two or a one-to-three, you know, which is a kind of halfway house between a small group and a kind of one-to-one. So I lead a one-to-three at the moment with three students, and it feels a lot like a one-to-one at the kind of accountability tailoring level, but it is with a few of them, and they have some peer support as well, which I think works really nicely. We'll come on to accountability shortly, but the one thing I guess to say is, and this is obvious, is it's single sex. And you know, that's really basically obvious. But I think, you know, there's biblical precedent for that. So, for example, in Titus, let me read out Titus chapter 2, an encouragement to us as we think about the whole area of doing one-on-one ministry. Titus 2, chapter 2, verse 4. Paul is teaching Titus, and he talks about the older women, and then he says, then having taught the older women, then they can train the young women to love their husbands and children. So women help women, seems to be the older women help young women, is the model in Titus 2:4. And then we're told that Titus is to similarly encourage the young men to self-control. So Titus teaches the young men, and the older women teach the young women. So there is a kind of an appropriateness to the kind of discipleship that's going on. And I think on the accountability thing, just one other thing to simply add, and that is that it might be that you're both quite theological. Maybe you really love studying theology, you've got lots of deep questions, they may have deep questions. And you could spend all of your time talking theology, Bible, And it's great to spend a lot of time doing that, but it may also be that the person, quite unbeknownst to you, is having a complete mare spiritually in different kind of columns of their kind of, you know, walk with God, so that the kind of theological understanding about doctrines columns are doing well, but they're basic. So I was once, you know, did a one-to-one with somebody, and you know, it became apparent quite a long way into it that they were sleeping with their girlfriend, and I just thought, my goodness, I had no idea that was going on. But they were, and it led to some huge, huge ramifications. Or, yeah, so if I were you, that for me would make me err at the Bible end on the kind of less heavy, less intense end, because there's lots of opportunities for heavy teaching going on in Cambridge, and a bit more applied heart kind of work, I think I would err people on the side of. Again, we'll talk about that in a sec. One other, we'll come with that in a second. And then lastly, prayer, and I think, you know, a good number of minutes of prayer. I tend to force us to pray for more than, well, I want us to pray about what we studied and other stuff too. So I tend to, when I share prayer points, I say, have you got a couple of prayer points from the passage and then a couple of prayer points from outside the passage, which forces them to get something from here as well as something outside in the real world, which might be, you know, to do with the accountability, but it might be something different too. Questions or comments about that little kind of taxonomy, friendship, Bible, accountability, prayer? I might say we're going to come on to that, but any questions right now on those four things? Yeah?
Just regarding the question, you should be how to want me.
Yeah.
Aside from the perspective, you have to be spiritually more mature than
the. Yeah.
Are there any other factors you think should be taken into account, like age? Like, should you always be older than them?
I think probably that would be a norm, but I don't think that necessarily has to be the case. There were, you know, half of the church is older than me, you know, more than half the church potentially. So hopefully, you know, we can help each other in different kind of capacities and contexts. So I've done a one-to-one with someone who was, you know, much, much older than me before, and I think that was okay. If you're in the wanting to think about who should I do this with, and if you're going to do it all through Eden, then I put a sheet of paper at the back in our little break. If you're kind of sold, yeah, I'm keen to do this. I'd like to, I'd either want to do one or want to find out a bit more. Let's have a personal chat about it. Put your name down, and if you're keen to do it through Eden, we will help kind of link you up with either students or other people. If you're trying to take these principles and apply them to studying the Bible one to one with a non-Christian outside of the Eden context, I can give some advice on it, but that'll be a different matter, I guess. Okay. Any other questions or comments about on those ingredients of one to ones, if you like?
What if your friends like a seeker or like a non-Christian? Like, is it okay to? I mean, like, how personal should prayer be, like, in our lives?
The prayer
times,
you mean, or how?
Yeah, should it be there at all? Or?
Well, I think, obviously, theologically, you know, non-Christians don't have a relationship with God yet, so prayer is an expression of our relationship with God. But you could certainly pray, and you could say, "Do you mind if I pray at the start of our time?" I find God really helps me as whenever I study the Bible. Do you mind if I pray and ask it? And do you mind? And God loves to hear the prayer. Please, Lord, help me to understand about you. He will love to hear that prayer. I'd be kind of open to that. It's obviously a different. The accountability side of things is a little bit different again if they're not a Christian. It might be that they want some help. If they're someone who's, say, I don't know, in an extreme instance, say they've been an alcoholic and they've really struggled, or a drug addict, you're trying to help them and they're still not a Christian, you might have a bit of accountability there before they have come to Christ, maybe. I can think of individuals who've done that. But you will tailor. That's one of the beauties of the one-to-one thing. The more you're getting to know them, you're thinking, I think it would be appropriate to say, shall we pray now? And maybe, would you like to pray? You've been to this study, you're growing, and I want to encourage you to do that. So, is that okay? We'll come on to actually what we do with them in a second. Any more last questions, comments? Great. Let's now quickly think about. So, what we're going to do is, the rest of the time, half of it will be on the Bible bit, and then a bit of time on the accountability bit, and then troubleshooting as we close. So that's our kind of plan. So the Bible bit, why don't you go back into your little groups again? I told you I'll get you working. What are some of the pros and cons of the following study options? Either a Bible book with bought notes, like some of these fellas, you know, publish. The Good Book Company do brilliant material. That's on Acts, that's on Psalms. These are kind of Bible study quiet time notes, but you could easily use those as a one-to-one material. Either bought notes or a Bible book from the Bible, and you do your own notes, you write it, you prepare it like a Bible study and work it, or a good Christian book that you might want to discuss. Pros and cons of those three options. Okay, so spin around in your groups, and we'll see that. Like, in fact, Will, can you click? Okay, guys, do you mind if we hope you've had a bit of time to think about that? Then feed some of that back to what are some of the kind of pros and cons? Just fire out any comment, you know, whether it's on the bought notes, owed notes, or Christian book.
So a good Christian book is a pro when it's very practical.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're getting a lot of biblical attention in church and see
that,
a book can be very practical.
Yeah, thank you. It can be practical, it can be applied, it's been kind of, the meal has been digested a little bit. And it's teacher, scripture says God gives us teachers, and having a teacher to do that teaching is really helpful. When might it be potentially more advantageous to a Christian book, or at least worthy of consideration in a kind of one-to-one over, say, a Bible book, whether it's notes written by yourself or by, you know, somebody else that you've used? Thank you. Yeah.
Well.
Exactly. Really, if there's a very specific issue which they've got a question on, or a lifestyle issue on, so whether that issue is what might be, how do you study the Bible at all? It might be modelling how to study the Bible is the way to do it. In fact, that's what I'd probably recommend that. But if you've done a bit of that and you say, well, actually, we can step back a bit from the actual specifics of the text and have a go at, how we go about doing it. Some of the books, like the Dig Deeper or Dig Even Deeper books, are really, really good at giving people tools at how to study the Bible. I guess other issues to do with kind of sexuality, purity, if those are issues that, the person you're meeting with is a struggle, whether kind of relationship level they're in a relationship, whether they're not in a relationship, and that's a struggle. Books that have been really kind of distilled wisdom from a load of different Bible passages and pulled together on this issue and applied. Sometimes they've got good discussion questions which you can use. Thank you. Other reasons why you might lean, or you might seriously consider doing a Christian book. Any other thoughts? Indeed. So, for example, take some kinds of Cambridge students. It might be that they come to church morning and evening, and go to Kick You Central on a Saturday night, and go to a college Bible study group. That might be four strands of Bible input already before you've even done anything else. And you think, well, it's good to digest. It's not just good to eat. And simply saying, okay, we've got four streams coming in, why don't we choose one of those streams and use that as our basis for what we do our one-to-one on? That's not a bad thing. Or kind of rotate around the stream to say, we'll chew over this stuff, or we'll look at a good Christian book, because some more systematic or applied or pastoral stuff isn't happening at the moment, and that's what we do. Let's think about the kind of the Bible option in the Bible bit. Some of the pros or advantages to doing, say, own notes. What do you think about that?
It's maybe more personal, and you can tailor it.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
So you get more out of it.
Yeah.
Think about it a bit more.
Yeah. It's like cooking a meal, for somebody, rather than giving them a microwave meal. You feel like you've kind of been involved in it yourself. You know what you're serving up.
What we were talking about is that with some of these notes, like Explore, sometimes you just get this question: you think, where did that come from? Kind of throw the whole thing with both you and the person you're studying with. Getting stuck on a question rather than a Bible passage.
Yeah, so it's you two against the notes rather than the notes. Yeah, kind of weird dynamic. Yeah, Okay, thanks. Any other thoughts about, well, there may be some cons on it, but I don't know, yeah, what did you think? Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah, it's a, you know, that thing, that, you know, it will take more work on you. I think a not to be underestimated thing is that when we're doing one to one, not only, God willing, we're hearing God's voice in the scriptures, and that happens whenever we do Bible studies. You know, we don't quite hear God's voice quite so kind of. It's not quite the same for a good book. You know, we hope his voice will come through that, but it's clearly, you know, God's word when we do a Bible study. But there are two things that could go on when you lead a study, which you've done. Not only do you hear God's voice in that passage, but you're hopefully empowering the person and modelling them how you heard God's voice. So it's kind of, give a man a fish and you feed him today, give him a rod and line and teach him to fish and you feed him for life. And there is a sense in which, as you do a Bible study which you did a note on, you're kind of giving him the rod and line as well as giving him the fish. So it can work, you know, two ways. Okay, pros and cons on board note, just let's complete the circle quickly and then we'll have a break.
Sometimes when you're doing your own notes, you can get a bit tired and rush it and just completely get it wrong. And yeah, you realise in the middle of the study that you've got it.
Yeah. Better good notes than your notes,
yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah.
If, you know, at one level, yes, thank you. Other thoughts?
Constantly better death are questions which we do isn't. I mean,
yeah. Okay.
Heart-searching questions.
Yep. Thank you. More heart-searching. Yeah. Yep. You can hide behind those questions always sometimes, and you both have to deal with that. Yeah. Yep. Other thoughts? Maybe you could study Amos in a way that you might not immediately think about doing Amos if you were doing the notes yourself. Or Revelation, which might scare you a little bit, but hey, we can get some expert help on this. Maybe you too can demonstrate a bit more the modelling of how we respond to God's word, because you're hearing a question as well as, it's not simply you asking a question as authority and they are responding to the question as learner, but you're both hearing a question which you're both then having to respond to. So you can potentially model responsiveness. You're not modelling how you got there, but you are modelling potentially the kind of, wow, we've heard before say this, let's interact with that. Okay, you could think of cons, you could talk more about that, but we're going to stop now and we're going to have a break. So thanks, Will, for making that happen for us. Good man. Let's stop there. Say you've decided that you're going to study a Bible book, which would be a good thing. I tend to generally kind of, my opening gambit when I'm doing a one-to-one with someone for the first time, we'll normally start with a Bible book, so I think that's a good thing to do. Where do we start? One thing about the thing which is so wonderful, I think, about accountability and one-to-one is the bespoke nature that you can do. So 1 Thessalonians 5:14 is a great verse. Let me read it to you. This is the kind of final, the closing instructions that Paul is giving to this church. And he says, "And we urge you, brothers, warn those who are idle, encourage the timid, help the weak, be patient with everyone." So Paul is envisaging different types of person within the congregation with different needs and therefore different kind of pastoral responsibilities for each of them. Great verse, 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Warn the idle, encourage the timid, help the weak, be patient with everyone. I think what we can get from that is that the gospel is both the skeleton key that opens every heart. Yeah, we know that that's the case. It deals with people's biggest issue. But different keys do kind of, there's a sense in which there are different Bible keys that do open different kinds of pastoral situations. You know, so the key of warning is for the idle, of encouragement to the timid, and so forth. And so, while any book would be profitably studied by any person, you might think, actually, given this person's situations, you know, let's look at this book. Okay, back in your groups. You've got those five little questions to think about. Are you happy to still work in these groups? You know, you've become friends now, haven't you? Friendship with a purpose. Put that friendship to a purpose and think about what you might study with these five people. You might think of a brilliant non-biblical good Christian book that you might recommend too, but have a quick think. You've got 2 minutes to go. Okay, let's feedback there. So what Bible books might be suitable to read with the following people? A new Christian who has many bad habits from their past life. What suggestions do people have? Why don't people, what is that group? Any suggestions?
Galatians, Ephesians, and 1 Peter.
Holy living, the past is kind of, you've spent enough time there. Great. Thank you. Any other suggestions from anyone else that we came up with?
For the first one?
Yeah.
A gospel.
Yeah.
Would be a good thing.
Yeah. New Christian, you can't go far wrong with the gospel, can you, at all? My old mentor, Mark Dever, who's pastor of Church in the States, the first book that he reads with people is 1 Peter, whether they're young, old, somewhere in between. It's just that's his kind of opening one. Somebody who's recently been asked to serve as a CE rep, maybe who you feel is more mature than you, which isn't the worst thing in terms of you, but you, the strong young Christian. How about the Keys group at the back, including along with David? Yep.
We thought maybe a letter to sort of someone in leadership, perhaps Titus.
Yep, the pastoral letters, that's great. Any other options? They're good, very good starters. Yeah, thank you. My personal opening favourite is Titus. I very regularly do that. It's the first book I did, as you guys know. Okay, how about being persecuted? How about the fire group over there? What did you come up with? Being persecuted, tempted to give up. Any suggestions? Yeah. Thank you. Philippians, the kind of joy that through suffering thing. Any other suggestions for that one?
Psalm.
Thank you, yeah, that's good. Making some do a selection, yeah, great. Yeah, that's great. Kind of pick you 5, 6, 7, 8, or Romans 8. Spend a term in Romans 8. That would be a bad use of meeting up with it. There's also the kind of the tempted to give up bit makes me think of places like Hebrews, which is all about turning away from the faith, or potentially and not doing so. Colossians, which might be kind of moving on from Christ, and it depends how big the persecution thing is. How about an international student who you're not sure is actually a Christian?
Gospel.
Yeah, brilliant. Hard to better that, really. And also, it's not only that it's so full of the gospel, but it's, and it's more straightforward. You could think Romans, but that's a bit more kind of technical. So the gospel is great. Any favourite gospels? They're all brilliant. They're all inspired, aren't they? Mark. Mark, short, simple, punchy, lots of new stories about Jesus. Yeah, excellent. How about someone nervously wanting to make the most of the forthcoming CE mission? Yeah? Why?
Unity together and
the gospel. Yeah. Thank you. Other thoughts?
Ecclesiastes, to put everything else in perspective.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, great. The kind of the mushrooming of the gospel's growth and you're getting with God in his mission. That'd be brilliant, doing Acts. Okay, thank you for that. That's really been helpful for me. The next time I'll come back to you. The accountability bit, let's think about that now. So this really is where we kind of go deep into what can make a one-to-one quite significant. Let me paint you a picture first of all, though. Imagine I'm inviting Paul and Jen Riddington to my house for lunch. Now, if you know them, they're an older couple at church. They're good, very, very good in the garden. Paul is, you know, a great gardener. And so I want to show him my impressive tree I've got down the end of the garden. And on my tree, I've got loads and loads of... I've been saying for the last week, you're coming on Sunday for lunch, so excited, you see my apple tree at the end of the garden. It's a really super-looking apple tree. And then, just before they arrive, I realised, goodness me, we don't have any apples on our apple tree. There were no apples at all on the tree. But fortunately, we've had a Tesco delivery come through earlier that day. And so I run out with a bunch of apples from the bag of Tesco apples with my stapler. And I staple the apples onto the branches. And I say, look, Paul, we've got a great tree, an apple tree in my garden. And it becomes quite apparent they're not a real thing. Accountability, we've got to be careful when we urge people into gospel godliness, and it's quite obvious when there are issues that we don't like or things that we do like, to not have any sense of kind of fruit stapling in ministry. Fruit grows naturally from the work of God in people's hearts by the word. We pray for people. I hope we're not going to spend much time, but I hope you pray regularly for people who you're leading in a one-to-one, or you might do. And it's God's work, it's not your work. If the individual has a mare, and you know, I can think of some people who I've had one-to-one with who've done really, really well, others who I think have not done brilliantly, and it's, soul-searching, was it something that I did or said or didn't do or say? But it's ultimately, gospel growth is done by the Lord, and we're not to ever be tempted to kind of fruit stapler and try to urge people to push things on them. We'll honestly see some better quiet times from you, and if that hasn't come out of the gospel growth in their hearts, disciplines that we might try and be accountable with them on isn't the real deal. So that's just kind of preamble. And what we're longing for, the way fruit growth happens, real fruit growth, not fruit stapling, is as God changes people's hearts. Now, he does use other people in the process of changing their hearts. It's not simply the case that you just sit back and watch and God's going to do his work. You will be involved, and not only when you lead the Bible study or lead a discussion over the Bible or a good book. As you ask probing questions, God can use you and a person in need of change to help someone else who's in need of change. But the prayer is that God would work at the heart level. And there are kind of four priorities, really, that we want to be thinking about having in our head as we're approaching this aspect, the one-to-one. Which, by my kind of breakdown earlier on, this is only 10 minutes and you can spend all of your time. This, to be honest, this could be a whole... You could take a career in being a pastor or a counsellor. I'm not expecting that kind of level of, discipleship, but it's good to aspire and to look up. Interestingly, on this topic, on the idea of kind of pastoral counselling and caring for other people's souls, which is really a bit what we're having a brief intro into, TEAM, which is the training course that is based here at Eden, does plenary days where once a term or once a year they have one day where they get an external speaker in and they invite not only the students who do TEAM but other people from churches in Cambridge, outside of Cambridge, to come to it. And normally there's kind of 50 to 80 people who come along to it. It's a good day, maybe sometimes a bit less. They did a session last year, or earlier in the year, on pastoral counselling, how we help people's soul. And I think there's like 250 people. It was just double the biggest one ever. And the whole thing was packed out. It was just extraordinary. And so clearly there's a great need that people want to be trained in and think more about. So this is beginning a conversation, and that book by Paul Tripp on instruments in the Redeemer's hands, I would really encourage you to think through if you want to develop in this area. But let's introduce the topic by looking at these four areas: love, know, speak, do. What do I mean by that? What I mean is we're to love somebody, we're to get to know them, and And that occurs by kind of asking questions, listening, remembering, etc. Asking good questions, really trying to understand where the person is at. To speak to them. And that will mean saying words of encouragement, but sometimes words of confrontation. And we want to help them do. We want to help them put stuff into practice. This is the kind of the application end. So let's just kind of walk through that quite quickly. Love. So this is, I guess in some respects is the friendship aspect of a one-to-one already. But we really want to be there for them. We want to work out when is the best. You know, we kind of want to be faithful. Don't be the one that's late. You know, if you're meeting up, you know, be there. Be reliable. You want to kind of enter their world. Find out where's the best place for them to have this opportunity to grow spiritually. You know, is it in their room? Is it in Starbucks? Is it your house? Is it in Eden? We can use Eden very easily. It might be that just being on their turf will open up opportunities for discipleship which you wouldn't have spotted. So I remember, you know, before now, you know, encouraging somebody in their godliness, then, you know, kind of typical guy struggles they're having, and then I went around to their room and they had an enormous picture of a kind of scantily clad Sandra Bullock on the wall. I was like, why didn't I come here before now in terms of our conversation? That's clearly a factor in your own Christian growth. And sometimes going onto someone's turf might help you get to know them a bit, but that's demonstrating that you love them and you want to, you know, be where they can be at. I guess in a sense it's the kind of incarnational model where the Lord Jesus, he loves us and he comes into our world. He doesn't, you know, say, you come onto my plane if you're going to interact with me. He comes down, serves, remembers, you know, meets people in their needs. So really, really do that. I think, I guess there's a kind of slight sense in which you want to, you know, talk to them about, you know, part of, you know, modelling your own Christian life is part of kind of the loving thing too. So saying what you're struggling with, how you became a Christian, maybe ask them how they became a Christian too. Ask them what they want to get out of the kind of one to one. So you're really trying to kind of empower them and say, look, you're here. I'm here for you. I remember, you know, I used to get note after note after note from Josh Moody, who was the guy who read the Bible with me when I was a student. Pat Blake is still amazingly loving in kind of, you know, sending postcards just every time there's something going on. Literally, even now, any time I'm away doing something else, he'll always send me a text saying, pray for you, hope it goes well. It's just extraordinary level of love and kind of commitment in the long haul. That's the first point, love. Second point, no. This is where We really want to get to know the person, and so I tend to kind of have a mental checklist of the kind of five or six G's that I don't always ask about all of these things, but I kind of scrolling through them in my mind, and, you know, and occasionally we will cover these kind of topics. So I don't know what God is all about, but. Guys, God was the first one. That's not guys. Excuse me, I was half asleep. Just bang out extremely quickly earlier this evening. God. So how's it going with God? And not simply, you know, how are your quiet times, which is quite easy to answer. You know, I've had five quiet times or three quiet times, and therefore I feel good or not so good or average. But the question which someone used to ask me, which is very probing, is what's God doing with you at the moment? Which forces you into thinking, God is a real person and he is doing something with me. So what is that? You can't say, I've been reading Romans. That doesn't answer the question, what is God doing in you at the moment? I've been reading Romans. It's kind of one way of answering, but it's, he's been breaking me. He's been encouraging me in the gospel. He's been showing me my sin in this area or that area. That just forces you to kind of answer in a kind of, wait, so also God questions, guys, girl questions, obviously. It's all going to be, this is going to be single sex, but, you know, do be as specific as you can and need to be. Sometimes being over specific kind of, in a sense, you know, can be unhelpful if that's not an issue for that person. You don't want to kind of, you know, assume that they're always, that all guys are struggling with pornography, and so basically if this person isn't, then they're kind of not, you know, they're not living life correctly. They should be. No, you want to say, that's fine. But so you need to kind of probe them enough But if they're in a relationship, I would say have it on terms that you're able to ask how it's going in that relationship. Are they honouring their girl or guy, boy or girl or boyfriend appropriately, emotionally, physically, spiritually? Are they getting closer to the Lord because of that relationship or away from Him? We can ask. We can talk more about that. Gold, how you spend your money. Gogglebox, what are you watching in terms of, on the TV, on the internet, on your phone? Increasingly, things like Covenant Eyes have proved very helpful for some people, as well as some kind of strong filters, particularly on the kind of dodgy websites that some people, both guys and girls, 30% of people who struggle with pornography are girls. So it's not just a guy thing. So if you're a girl senior partner, don't ignore that question. Grog, are they drinking? How are they interacting? And gang, who are their people? Who are their friends? Non-Christian friends, are they out there with them? Are they just with their Christian friends in CU? So I won't generally ask about everything and kind of check them off, but I will kind of rotate through those issues over the course of a few weeks. Ask good questions. What's a good question? It's an open, not a closed question. So, what's an example of a closed question?
Do you have good data?
Thank you.
No.
Give me an example of an open question.
Tell me about your day.
Tell me about your day. Or what's a typical week for you? Or, what are you looking forward to about when you go home for the holidays? Or, how do you get on with your brother? Or whatever. Those kind of things. Just be open. I think that's really. Listen to what they say. Don't just kind of hear their name to their siblings and forget them. Write them down if need be. Literally, then and there, have a pen and paper, write it in your notebook you're doing, and just try to remember some key data because that will help as you talk about them later on. What was the other thing I wanted to say? Don't make wrong assumptions. Simply, the presenting issue might not be the real issue for them. So clarify, kind of, how did that happen? What do you mean by this? Why do you think you did that? Don't just kind of go with the first thing. So clarify before you kind of exhort and urge someone, because they might be presenting one thing and you think, oh, I know the answer to that, and kind of come straight in. Let me stop right there. Any questions or comments about the love section or the no section on? Yeah.
Any good books on this kind of thing? It's really good.
Yeah. On the listening one, actually, generally we're doing a session this time next week on listening skills in kind of discipleship and in relationships. So that would be a good thing. It's not on how to listen in lectures, which someone asked me, is that what it's about? No, it's not about that. It's not about listening in relationships, I think. I said it again, I'll keep banging on about that. Instant and crappy book. Let me take a few other ones later. I would be very happy if, at the end of our time, I had got you excited about a ministry in the States called the Christian Counseling and Education Foundation, or CCEF.org. Okay, CCEF.org. Everything they do is brilliant. And they have some key people who write books for them, and Paul David Tripp is one of those folks. Someone called Ed Welch is one of those guys. David Powlison is the other person. They're the three kind of big names. Timothy Lane is another person who's involved in it too. And they've written a great many excellent resources. When I was a student, this kind of material just wasn't there. In the UK, actually, Tim Chester has popularised some of their material in his book You Can Change, which you may have seen, which is also extremely, extremely good. Graham Vine actually has written his book on identity, which is, I think, kind of popularised it as well as another level. But this book is a great kind of primer on leading one-to-ones. And they've produced loads of resources on just a whole range of different kind of personal situations, like when desires don't take no for an answer, or mastering time management, or being thankful even when it hurts, or escaping the maze of anger, and just like dozens and dozens of these things, books on kind of, on, I don't know, struggling with singleness or self-harm or suicide or, you know, my non-Christian parent, you know, has rejected me, or, you know, like, just amazing numbers of resources. Go on their website. I have quite a lot of their material. Come have a word with me if you'd like to find out more info for them. But that's my kind of, you know, encouragement. Paul Tripp actually speak at New Word Live, if you're interested. Any other questions or comments about those top two, the love and the no sections?
So you were talking about probing, but not too much.
Yeah.
I guess that becomes more
easier. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the way of doing that?
I think, good question. What's probing not too much? I think setting the terms at the start would be helpful. So if you can mutually agree, this is what is one of the things we have on offer. Accountability is a voluntarily kind of saying, look, it's just offering, would you like me to hold you accountable? And that will mean me asking you some hard questions about how it's going with you and God and in some other areas of your life, like you and your girlfriend, or you and your course, or you and your mates, etc. So if they agree to that, then they've agreed to it. We will come on slight... there is probing, and then there's the confronting. Probing is the asking questions. Confronting is the having heard some stuff which I'm a bit concerned about. I might say something. We'll talk about that in a second. What do other people think? You know, what counts as too probing, and what's fair game?
I think you can tell when someone is unhappy.
Yeah.
Because it will be incredibly reluctant, and it will feel like a police interview or something. Whereas, I think my experience of being one-to-one, there was a certain speed at which I could grasp things that my leader was trying to expose and get me to think about, so they had to sort of go at my speed. But they weren't probing into anything that I wasn't fundamentally happy to have exposed. So it's not, I think if it becomes about you trying to hack into the sort of things they don't want you to know, that's not good. But if you are sort of just going along the path with them to understanding stuff, then that
thank you. Very helpful. One time, someone said to me, and I took this as a very salient kind of wake up call, which was, you know, Dave, a few of us were talking, and we were all agreeing how easy it is to say the right answer to the person doing a one-to-one to us. I.e., it's, you know, we didn't talk about whether one-to-one versus groups allow you to wear a mask more. You would have thought a one-to-one makes it a bit harder to wear a mask, and there were less people to kind of impress and to kind of hide behind. But this person said to me, Dave, a few of us were talking, it is pretty easy to kind of say what you want, you know, what the person wants to hear. And that's pretty, you know. And the person said to me, I trust you know, well, love him well. I was there one time with him at the time, and it made me think, blimey, I need to maybe be a bit more probing, and actually, kind of, if I'm erring on one side of assuming the better, assuming the worse, don't assume too much. I think it's probably a safe bet, which is why kind of scrolling through all of these issues, it may be that a particular thing, drink, has never been an issue, and suddenly it has come an issue, and you didn't know. Like, how on earth do I know that? They're regular church, but you know, drink has become an issue. Okay. Any more questions or comments?
With the accountability thing, I'm just wondering, is there ever a case where they can do the same to you?
That's another good question. Is it entirely symmetric two-way? I think if you can model a bit of it, that's fine. There will inevitably be a sense in which it's an asymmetric relationship. You're not two buddies who are in the same, you know, in a prayer triple or kind of two in the same. There is an asymmetry there.
Yeah. Something I'm thinking about is that it seems to me that we're in danger of becoming a cult if the mentor is sort of always
sort of the person who dictates all the terms or something.
Sure. So I think there are other, hopefully there are other aspects to what we're doing that are also un-cult-like, yeah. But heavy shepherding is a feature of cults that are kind of become very controlling and exclusive, and we want to be open and all the rest of it, which we'll come on to in a second. But yeah, if we can model some degree of vulnerability, openness, yes, I feel that too. Like, if you're married, for example, you know, your wife is your first, accountability partner, so I think there's an agreed confidentiality at that level, which not many of us are in that situation, but there you think, well, it's not appropriate to kind of to divulge stuff. But equally, if you can, I think take opportunities to be open where you can, I think is probably my point. Yeah.
I think you can't really expect confidentiality from them, can you?
Oh, certainly not, no. So assume you're going public when you say, I'm doing this or that or the other. On that note, let's quickly press on. Confidentiality under the speak, don't offer it. You just can't, you can't promise it. It's, for many reasons, that's not particularly wise. It doesn't mean you're going to get a leaky bucket and blog about what they've just said. Tell all your friends, and you can say that's if a big issue comes up, then you can say, I can't keep this just to me, but I'll need to talk to, say, the elders or say Genevieve, whatever, who will be discreet and responsible with that. On the, I've said confrontation, I don't know why I just put confrontation, there's encouragement. We can use, the point of speaking the words is to be built up, and we want to use that word to build other people up. I don't know if you were around, I preached a sermon in the summer on using our words for good and helping build other people up on it. I did this grid, which I think I found quite helpful, I showed it to you. It's called the Beavers grid. I don't know why, I don't know whether Beavers are involved in the making of it, but it's basically a question that kind of matrix is, when do you challenge somebody on an issue, okay? And up here it's how important the issue is, okay? So at the top there's really important things like the gospel, at the bottom it's really unimportant things like what kind of socks they're wearing, okay? Here it's how sure I am of being right. Okay, so here, the far end, I'm very sure. I know absolutely that I'm married to Sally. Down this end, I'm really not at all sure about, I don't know, what the name of the student's dog, grandmother's dog's called. I have no idea. Actually, that's pretty unimportant too, so that would get a kind of mark down here. Sometimes there are things that are really important, but I'm not sure about, like the date of the return of Christ and all the specifics to do with the second coming. That's up here. It's really important. I don't know the details. So, and there are other things that I'm really absolutely certain of that are absolutely unimportant, like my first dog was called Josie. Like that, I know of it, but it's really unimportant. And the point is, keep your confrontations to areas in this kind of quadrant of the grid where you're really sure and it's really important. Now we'll argue over, I'm quite sure about that and it's quite important, and so you've got to be careful. And but the other thing is to keep your arguments or your challenges, your confrontations to this top corner. And don't let this grow. Because it's tempting to think, everything is a gospel issue. It's all a gospel issue, so therefore it's all more important than really, really it is. Or, I'm really sure about this, but are you really, really sure of it? So, the fact that you saw this, someone said to you that this person, was going out with a non-Christian. Going out with a non-Christian, I would say, is an important issue. But are you absolutely sure about it? If you're absolutely sure, then go for it. If you're not, then be cautious about the level of your kind of confrontation. You might want to ask the question rather than kind of say, I hear you going out with a, I think that's a really bad thing to do. Well, what are you saying? I've got you, etc. Okay? I think the grid basically said 1,000 words, so just remember the lesson of that. And that's the area of confrontation. And then the last point, and we'll have another chance of Q&A, is do. And that is, help people help people out of the issue that they're in. If they're in an issue, help them out. If they're not in an issue, help them to grow and to strive. You're not their kind of pastor. You're just helping them. You're holding their hand as they walk along the road with Jesus. And as much as in your Bible studies, in your quiet, in your kind of modelling, you can have good application. Talk specifics. Talk, how we can help each other. So I remember a few of us. I used to phone people up at 7 o'clock in the morning to get them out of bed to pray. Can you do that? Could you provide that service as well as asking them tough questions that might wake them out of bed, if that's the issue? Or phone them up at night and say, go to bed now because you're not going to get up at 7. If you're up after 11. You can write your quiet time off. Just be on their case. Again, it's not heavy shepherding, I don't think. It's just kind of a mutually agreed helping them put it into practice. And then I think something that I just take enormous comfort in is Acts 20:32, which is when Paul is about to disappear from Ephesus. He's in his boat and they're all really upset that he's going. He says, "Now I commit you to God and to the word of his grace, which can build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified." In other words, Paul has worked his guts out for 3 years with these elders, and then he's going, and he's just going to leave them to the Lord and commit them to the Lord and his grace. And there is a time for that. A time for just saying, "I've done all I can, I'm going to leave you to God and pray for you," and there we are. So we can't, otherwise we're going to either become a heavy shepherding cult and kind of lock people into this possessive relationship, or kind of fruit staple, and they'll start doing things because we've said it rather than because God has grown that fruit out of their hearts. I've not talked about when you stop a one-to-one. There's inevitability when you kind of grow, you get older and you keep in touch but a bit less frequently, so and your relationship changes a bit. So I guess Jonathan and Will and I used to meet together. We kind of still have seen each other a little bit, but not the regular slot that we did or whatever. So you have a kind of different dynamic as you all grow up, you pray. So any more questions about the speak do sections, and then I'll just quickly fire this last little thing to you, which I'll say to you. Well, let's look at the grid. Is it an important issue? Are you sure you're right on it? You've got the data, you've known, so you've done your clarifying, did you really mean this? You've done your, in what sense was this happening? You were doing, when does this issue occur? And if you're pretty sure that we're up this end and we're pretty up high, then that raises big alarm bells, I think, for me. So I would have thought if they're going up with a non-Christian, saying that you've got pretty good, you're pretty confident they are, you don't have to ask for advice. It might be that you feel like you're kind of saying all the things that you would want to say, and it's not as if I'm going to say very many clever different things, but it may be that if they, for example, are an associate member at Eden, then there's a whole other level of discipleship that you would invoke, potentially called church discipline. Well, not that you would be, I'm not sure what would you be disciplined for that, possibly not. But you might be if things were getting more kind of serious, or you'd start asking questions. Certainly if they were a member, you would have there's a kind of elder oversight that comes into play, as well as the individual kind of one-to-one thing. So it is a kind of case by case, but if in doubt, ask is probably the norm. Any other questions?
Yeah. Where they just don't agree with
Get it. Work, pray. What do you think?
Yeah, pray.
I think open the Bible, God's word is the authority, show it's not my opinion, it's what the Lord... There was one person, as I say, who literally, strong Christian home, and he's like, and he was going out to somebody, and then he's like, he said, "I think I probably should talk to him. I've been, I was sleeping with so-and-so." It's like, I was like, "What are you doing? That's crazy." He's like, "Well, I'm like, is it that crazy?" I'm thinking, and like, literally, he was kind of starting to say, maybe what the church says and what we say about sleeping with somebody who you're not married to is maybe a little bit over the top. I was like, that's cr-. But sometimes, and then we prayed about it, and looked, well, you know, that it stopped pretty soon. But, you know, and he ended up marrying the person. This is, you know, long before it. None of you will know the people involved. But, I think you do need to kind of pray in the Word. Maybe other people that you can involve, if they've got friends who all know the situation, ask. If they're involved in Kick You Say, go to see whether other people can see you. Other questions or comments?
So you talked about the confrontation situation.
Yeah.
How about the sort of asking for advice situation? So instead of them, so they're not doing something, they're wavering over something,
yeah.
And they're going, well, I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah.
And you're sort of, I know, so recently had a situation where a guy was sort of like, oh, I'm not sure whether to go out with this girl or not, I wasn't whether to go out, but whether to pursue this girl or not.
Mm.
And he was just about coming up to a massive nexus of life change, which he didn't know what he was going to do to get the side of it. And so, you know, we had a chat about it, and I said, you know, probably not the best time to be pursuing something because you don't know where you're going to be in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
But I then had a bit of a sort of, should I have said that,
yeah.
You know, because it's kind of, you know, God has obviously created godly relationships in such situations.
Yeah. I think that, again, you know, I would say, is it an absolute, are you certain that was, so, you know, in your head, you know, is this advice, am I certain that what I'm saying is, do I absolutely believe what I'm saying? Maybe not, I'm not out here, but I'm somewhere at this end. And is it that an important issue? Well, it's pretty important. There, like, maybe being careful, cautious about prescribing kind of law where there isn't law in the scriptures. I think we're all latent legalists in our hearts and want to add rules to, you know, to help us in our sensual indulgence, to use the kind of Colossians 2 language. And, you know, that's not ultimately the cure. That's another, you know, because at the heart level, that's not the change. So, now it might be that there's a lot of wisdom in what, and it sounded like there was probably a lot of wisdom and thought in the comment that you made. But I think you can. How you couch it, you certainly can't say, I forbid you, and you might not say, you shouldn't. There's kind of levels of challenge, but you might say, I'm thinking I'm a bit uneasy about that, or, think really seriously about doing that. There are ways you would say something, I think.
I guess, are you talking about things like where there's a choice,
that
something that clearly
can
function?
Yeah,
not,
absolutely,
it's
yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
definitely not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess, you have
to make that clear. Because there are offensive situations we have in life, but they seem like really important to us, and they are there at that moment. But it's not like, if I do this, that's the thing. Yeah. If I do this, this is God's plan. Yeah. They're different options. Yeah. To take a certain amount of faith. Yeah. I would really listen a lot. If an older Christian who's wise, you know, and has had a bit of experience, gives me some, I think I'd think long and hard about doing X. I think it's okay to say that, because you are an older Christian than this person, say, and this is, yeah. Last questions or comments? Let me quickly fire through what we've said on troubleshooting. We've actually, without knowing it, have kind of given examples of all this. Help, something massive has come up, what do I do? Have a word with me or Julie or Genevieve, I would say, would be the second thing you do after pray then and there, and listen hard to the situation as well. I regret not having sometimes gone to somebody a bit more senior than me in past situations and have tried to kind of cope with it, and it's like, oh, this is getting a bit crazy. So ask for help. We don't ever seem to have time for the study. There's so much going on in their life. I think two things to say there. One, God's word is sufficient for life and doctrine. It's breathed, it's useful for all the things it is in 2 Timothy 3:16, etc. Not your wisdom. So getting the Bible open won't be, I can't help you as much as I was doing so before now, because, you know, there's less time talking shop about other stuff. And so maybe why not start with the Bible? Say, hi, come in, grab a coffee, grab a tea, and then go straight to the Bible before you talk about the rest of the life. That at least gets you some Bible time. You might think that, I don't know, say you're reading the Bible with, you know, the kicky president, or, you know, the a C president, or something, you know, something that is kind of, they've got lots going on. You know, it may be that, you know, there is rightly a